If you are a Protestant and you don't know why, I want to help you in a brief message to understand why. Why are we Protestants? That is a title that emerged in the 16th century in various religious struggles. There have been different terms that have arisen to sort of define a body of doctrine or a belief so central to define a body of doctrine that certain terms like Protestant have risen to the top. You would have other words like Trinitarian that do the same thing in human history at other times. The term Protestant, it has a interesting history. We associate it, and somewhat rightly so, with just the Protestant Reformation as a whole. So the movement in Europe when the Bible was made available in vulgar languages, the languages of various peoples, whether it's French or German, or people who were able to read them, were able to read the Greek original manuscripts for the first time, similar things began to happen. Switzerland and Germany, namely, in the 16th century. The Reformation being called Protestant in the idea of distinguishing from Rome and Romanism. The term Roman Catholic is a bit of a oxymoron in that Catholic just means universal or according to the whole, kataholos, according to the whole. And so there, I am a Catholic as a Christian, but it's a small C, Catholic, the first C there. The term Catholic as a religious view has a epistemological or a knowledge-based view that Protestants like me were decidedly against in the 16th century. So Catholic with a large C is a religious body of believers in their forms of what they claim to be Christianity. And Protestants were the same. Their various views of what they believed to be Christianity identified Protestantism writ large as a movement against Romanism. You could call it popery, and that isn't what, you know, since your home, you know, popery is the smell, potpourri, popery, P-O-P-E-R-Y. Romanism is popery. That's a pejorative term, so we don't use it very much, but you could call them papists. That is also would be seen pejoratively used as a negative connotation, but they are both apt descriptions. And then you have Eastern Orthodoxy. You know, Constantine established Constantinople, is modern-day Istanbul, at that place where Asia Minor moves into, or modern-day Turkey moves into the European continent, ancient Macedonia or Greece today. It was the Eastern Empire head for a little while before Rome is destroyed in 400 and various political changes divided East and West, and then only in, I think it's as maybe as early as 452. 452, you start to see claims of a Roman ascendancy, that the bishop in Rome or the bishop of Rome is the head of all Christianity in the world, or Christendom. It is a ludicrous and ridiculous claim that was invented for political expediency. And the bishops in the East, Far East and the Asia Minor area and in Egypt, all said, screw you, who do you think you are, you arrogant Romanists. And the Roman Catholic Church is born in the 6th century after those initial claims begin to raise in its arrogant claims that it is the ascendancy in Christianity. And then this view of papal succession, apostolic succession, is developed in light of it in a very different way than may have been affirmed prior to, as Peter being the highest see, S-E-E, the papal see in Rome, and they claimed an ascendancy over the other bishops, who also had large bishoprics in various cities throughout the known world at the time. And, well, Peter's is the highest among you all. Well, that's mainly a political maneuver. And the invention of the papacy is read back into history from modern papists who want to sell us that everybody believed that everybody was a Roman Catholic for the first 500 years of Christendom. That, to anybody who studies history, is a dream that is not historically accurate. And you understand certain struggles and how persecutions affected a need for coagulation, and where do you go to affirm what Christians believed? Well, you can sympathize in a world like theirs, that there would have been in Rome a wonderful thing with Constantine and the security of the Pax Romana. We can debate theology, we can have our churches established, unlike maybe anywhere else, in such a level of governmental approval. That you have this. But you have my point of all this is you have the idea of a papacy, which nobody has like at the Council of Nicaea. You read the minutes from that meeting, nobody is thinking there's a pope anywhere. Athanasius, the others, they are not at all interested in saying, well, we believe this because we are, you know, the church that Jesus built, you know, 400 years, 325 years ago or something, or whatever it'd be, 290 years ago. Not at all. Nobody's at all got that in their mind. And there's just no place for it. There's no reason for it. Well, once you have the invention of Peter as the chief of the apostles, and this idea read back in, which really begins again in the 4th, 5th, and then established in the 6th centuries through the political intrigues, you have this idea of a papacy. Well, then you go through the Islamic invasions, you go through the issues there of the wars and the Germanic tribes, and you fast forward a while through all of that history, you can sort of sympathize with those who wanted to unite around something and chose maybe certain bishops in areas to do so. Well, you go through the Crusades, 800 to 1000 or so, you know, AD, and 1000 to 1200 AD. You go through this period where the Crusades are called for, initiated in, you know, right around 1000, and then executed for a while, regaining the world that the Muslims had conquered, because Islam is a religion of the sword. It was spread by that for hundreds of years. Nobody can deny that historically, the caliphates and their work, you know, sort of like any other governmental view, Islam was spread by military might, and the Crusades went to recover it. Well, by the end of the Crusade period, Rome had devolved into such a superstitious, odd vestments, pageantry, dead religiosity, that you really began to see unchecked and uncheckable heresies that began to be inserted in the church, like the Immaculate Conception of Mary. Different doctrines like transubstantiation that are at first championed in much later categories of thought, and then anachronistically read into church fathers. And anybody knows that studies history, I can make the church fathers Reformed Baptists. And among the ignorant, they would go, Irenaeus was a Reformed Baptist. We can do this. And modern day Catholics love to try to do that. And they succeed with the ignorant, who'll never check their sources, who'll never read original sources. And they can say, well, you know, they practiced the Eucharist in the 2nd century. Sorry, pal, I've read the originals and I've seen the outworking. They absolutely did not. But this devolved church just gets worse and worse and worse. And because of its views that, you know, hey, before we had a Bible, people received traditions orally, and the apostles preached and taught. Forget that it started to be written as early as like 49, and delivered and quoted as scripture and laid down, etc. The scriptures didn't build the church because it existed before. Forgetting that they are not in that era and are not receiving mere oral transmission, they have something that will perpetuate the faith that would never contradict any oral transmissions, and that is the written epistles, scripture as the foundation, clearly God's intention. And they pretend we're in the same era, like the second century, where we don't have that as a codified thing, even though you have the Muratorian canon and the understanding and the development of canon very, very early on. I read Clement, the letter written from the elders in Rome in AD 90 to 95-ish to the elders in Corinth, and I read over and over and over and over their citations of Scripture. They have a very developed ecclesiology. Again, not a single hint of anything of a pope anywhere. Clement was no pope. But, you know, they write this letter and likely name it after one of the chief bishops in the area and send it to Corinth. But they just cite over and over. They did mention Judith as a book. They don't cite it authoritatively. They just have it in there. But you see the development even in AD 90 to 95 where their arguments are from Scripture. They are practicing sola scriptura in Clement for 30-some chapters. I mean, you read it, and it's just this treatise where they are delivering to the elders in Corinth why they should submit to their elders. It's amazing. All right, so you see all this. We're not in that era, even though you see the development of canonization at work as early as the close of the first century, when, by the way, the 27 New Testament books are finished. So we have this view that devolved and devolved and devolved, and the Protestant Reformation came on the heels of this long devolution. Whatever was honorable in Rome that had devolved after the Crusade period and through unchecked and uncheckable heresies of sacred tradition and papal apostolic succession, you end up with these strange ideas, Mariology, strange ideas of purgation, and strange ideas of a papacy, all things completely foreign to the apostles that are invented, and you can't remove them if you have a continuing apostolate, if you have a continuing papacy. Well, the Reformers rejected that. So at its very foundation, the Reformation, Protestantism as a theological view, becomes really valuable because we reject every foundational source of what they'd claim in Rome as the source for their theology, namely a papacy, a continuing apostolate, apostolic succession. That is a joke in history. We all know the Avignon papacy, the, you know, various popes deposing one another. It's a joke, and it reefs nicely. It reads nicely. We are the church of 2,000 years. Many Catholics want to claim today that is a lie, and it is a joke, and it's an invented fiction that the more you study history, the more you realize that whatever was honorable in Rome, I owe a great deal of my theology as a Protestant to those who called themselves bishops and such in the, maybe even popes in Roman Catholic history. Absolutely. God causes his light to shine on the evil and the just. And anyway, a broken watch can be right twice a day, analog or digital. And we see this, but whatever was honorable in Rome had been abandoned. And by the time of the 16th century, when the doctrine of justification, unlike any other point in human history, had finally been really levied and brought to the foreground, and exegesis done, and the same processes that emerged to produce doctrines of Trinity and Christology and justification being one of them, these massive doctrines produced the Reformation. And it divided, as doctrine always will, the true from the false. And the Roman Catholic Church heard what the Reformers taught on justification and said, to hell with that, and condemned them. So as Protestants today, even though there's a Germanic real source of that term, the political maneuvering that went on to protest against King Charles V, that Luther had done his thing under in the Holy Roman Catholic Empire of Germany, Protestantism has a governmental origin as a term. We take it to mean the broader theological movement that would encapsulate, you know, the Zwinglian Reformation, Calvin, Knox, you know, all of that. And that's proper. I understand why we do that. But you have this ideological movement that is decidedly anti-Catholic because of the heresies introduced by the Roman Church. Heresies, just blatant blasphemies against Christ. Transubstantiation being chief among them. This idea, you know, we reject that. And if you don't know why you're a Protestant, I want to help you understand that. All right, why all these 8,900 some Protestant denominations exist, which the World Christian Encyclopedia, produced from Oxford, 1983 edition, 2001 edition, all claim 242 roughly Roman Catholic denominations and roughly 9,000 Protestant denominations, and they lump into Protestant many things that don't belong there, groups that don't practice sola scriptura. So what is sola scriptura? There are really two doctrines that define what Protestantism is, listener. Two main headings under which we could say the Reformation in the 16th century was fought. Two of them. And they are, hello, they are the doctrine of Scripture, its place, thank you, Scripture's place in the church, and the doctrine of justification, how your sin is actually removed by the cross of Jesus Christ. These two doctrines are the chief headings, what make Protestants Protestants, and it makes these two doctrines make them decidedly un-Catholic and demand the Protestants' rejection of the papacy entirely as a legitimate office, all the saints, the treasuries of merit, the purgation, anything to do with Mary making post-mortem appearances, handing out necklaces, delivering theologies, all that crap we have to reject. What makes Protestants Protestants falls under two headings, and you can't be a Protestant and have communion with Rome because of these things, and they with us. They, it cannot be. So, sola scriptura is that the Bible, God's intention is to write 66 books. And in those books, we see the value of sola scriptura more in the 16th century than we could have in the second. So the whole idea, you have to understand history, we understand the value of sola scriptura more in the Reformation by what had crept in 1600 years of Christian history. And I'm not trying to speak monolithically as if all Catholics agreed on what that was. So don't let me, you know, compliment them inadvertently as if there is unity in Rome. But nonetheless, the views that emerged in the 16th century on justification that condemned the views that had developed at the headship of the Roman Catholic Church, we understand the need for sola scriptura more in the 16th century than anybody ever could have in the 4th century, even though they understood the value of the scriptures even then. We understand it more because of all the heresies than they ever could have in history before. So sola scriptura becomes more of a blessed doctrine because of what we see people and men always doing without practicing sola scriptura. So I hope you understand that. So our view of the Bible as the sole source to bind the conscience, to direct theology and doctrine, the levels of clarity of which it speaks in those doctrines demand of us an allegiance to one written source above all. Rome denies that. They mock that idea. In fact, it's the first place they try to go. I love to debate it with Catholics. It's the first place they try to go, as if the Bible doesn't say this or teach this. It's hilarious. But they have a view that it is not Scripture alone, but that it is Scripture and the continuing apostolate in the papacy, apostolic succession through the popes. So that dangerous view has brought in more mischief into the church than any other thing. Rome is the greatest enemy of Christianity the world has ever known. In its modern form, that is absolutely certain. Worse than Islam is Rome against Christianity. Well, sola scriptura and sola fide, the doctrine of justification, which is by faith alone, sort of like saying Christ is Lord alone. We have to, when we understand what faith is, we have to add the word alone in light of what Rome said about it. And the Eastern Orthodox Church, by the way, I mentioned Constantine and all of that. Won't go into that any further because I just got to wrap this up. But we have this anti-Catholic synergistic view where the Catholics demand water baptism is necessary for salvation. Well, you're anathema. To hell with you who believe that. If you believe water baptism, you must, that being born of the water and the Spirit means you have to be baptized in water. If you believe that being baptized in water is what makes you a Christian, you are going to hell. As a teacher, claimed teacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ, if you claim that truth, you are no worse, you are worse than a Judaizer who taught that circumcision was required to be saved. And we condemn you. So justification by faith alone, illustrated simply on Rome's blasphemous doctrine on water baptism shows us why we are decidedly not Catholics. Their theology demands 7 sacraments that a person is to practice and receive at least 6 of them in their lives, that they should, all things being equal, this is how God disseminates His grace to the world, the chief of those sacraments being the Eucharist, this blasphemous ceremony of the Eucharist that we utterly abhor as Christians. Like, the more you learn about the Eucharist, the more your stomach turns, spiritually speaking. It is decidedly anti-Christian what their doctrine on the Mass, or as part of the Mass, the Eucharist is. So justification by faith alone is the idea of the imputation of Jesus' righteousness, that what the cross purchases is a full pardon monergistically granted to you. No works, you get it. In Rome, you cannot reduce it beyond, no matter what we try to say, it is a system of works. It is a system of synergism or self-salvation through sacrament, illustrated chiefly in its views on water baptism, that an infant at 7 days old is washed of original sin and born again. Well, we absolutely recoil at such an idea. We should anyway, Mr. Luther. We should recoil at the idea of baptismal regeneration. But again, Rome couches its view of this in light of a system so defunct that we who know and believe sola scriptura have to reject and argue against, that it will not save, that it perverts the gospel. It is another gospel. And the Bible is very clear, there's only one gospel, and so there is no other gospel, and we have to affirm this. So what makes you a Protestant? Protestant? Is it just where you grew up? Is that it? Is it just where you grew up? And so, you know, your dad was a Baptist and your grampy, and so you're a Baptist? Or do you understand the theology that undergirds it that I'm so briefly skirting over here today? Well, I hope it's the latter, because I want you to understand where Protestantism comes from. And you can go and study the 5 solas that encapsulate Protestant theology. Go and check it out. Check out these 5, bug flying in my mouth, 5 solas of the Reformation. Go and check this out. Look at the 5 solas, and you will see a wonderful articulation of these doctrines laid out for you. What is Protestant theology? Well, this isn't it. You know, in other words, these 2, you know, things I'm briefly talking about today do illustrate it and sort of set us as like the Autobahn toward our destination here, to understand that Christians and Catholics have a different, we have the same definition of God. But only one of us worships Him. The other one dishonors Him. And, you know, this is the Autobahn that takes you there, but there are many off-ramps that you can consider and refresh and get fuel and food to understand these 2 main things, sola scriptura and sola fide. Scripture alone, faith alone. Once you understand that, there'll be many outworkings that show you the differences between the two. And these 5 solas wonderfully encapsulate even more than 2 of the solas I just gave you, of Scripture alone and faith alone. And those 2, you know, are just amazing, but they're just a part. They aren't all that we believe. So go and study this. Go and consider this matter more on your own. You should. You should, because you need to be sharing the gospel with your Catholic friends and family. You need to be telling them. Thank God, most Catholics have no clue what Rome teaches. Thank God, because I'm sure that God saves many people in and around the Roman Catholic whore. This church is a whore. She's just a bad thing. But at the top of it, like, you ask me, is a pope in heaven? I will give you an answer and just ask, was he a pope? That's the question, and that's the answer. They're in hell. They are proponents of a gospel so blasphemous and foul that, we Protestants didn't, you can't avoid this. And we never said anything different. So please understand what makes Protestantism Protestant. Don't just claim it culturally or superficially or flippantly. When you talk about this, this means something in history, folks. And you need to be bringing the gospel to your Catholic friends, because they don't have it and they don't believe it. And they'll probably mock it. God does save through ignorance, or not through ignorance, but in spite of or in ignorance. But that's not good enough for us. We want to see people come to know Jesus. We want to see the gospel taught. Sound doctrine is our burden as Christians.
Hi.
So that's what we want. And that's why I'm talking to you about this. Thank you. That when you consider the Bible in its totality and its message to the world, well, Rome doesn't teach it. Rome denies the gospel. And so what makes me a Protestant is a gospel. It's the gospel itself. Rome has another one. And what did Paul say of other gospels? He said they aren't gospels. So that's how important this is, listener. And I hope you understand it. I hope you can informedly examine Romanism for what it is, a denial of the gift of faith, and articulate that. These things divide us inseparably, or they make us separated, and we cannot separate it from all of our theology. And we need to be able to lovingly, but truthfully, because both boldness and love must adorn the Christian, articulate these differences. Tens, maybe even many more millions have died because of this difference. Don't pretend it's nothing. Don't be so prideful and arrogant as to say, well, we just go about things differently. When tens of millions of martyrs would say, shut your mouth. So that's how much divides us here. We are divided not over secondary matters as Christians and Catholics, true Christians and true Catholics. We are divided over Jesus himself. And nothing short of it. Nothing short of it. I can no more find fellowship with a Catholic than I can with a Latter-day Saint. I can no more find fellowship with a Catholic than I can a Muslim. I can't pray with you. I don't honor your religion. It is false, and it will lead to hell, if understood. So in a way, I don't want Catholics to study Catholicism. I want them to study the Bible. But, hey, once you buy into the idea of Rome, hook, line, and sinker, man, it takes the same miracle to undo that as it does somebody addicted to porn. Only God can do it. We just have to preach the gospel. But as you do, you're going to have to deal with this, Christian, Protestant. You're going to have to deal with this. And I hope you see the honor and the necessity of it as you consider these matters. If you're a Protestant, I want you to know why. It's not just a cultural thing. It's not just a geography thing. It's a theology thing. And I pray you come to understand it so that you can love people rightly by telling them the truth. And God bless you as you do. Any questions, comments, anytime, I can refer anybody here to tons of resources on this and talk to you till I am blue in the face and then tan again. God bless you and thanks for listening.